broadcasting from inside the Jim Butler Ballroom of the beautiful Mitzvah Hotel. KFAB and Twyla's Pack and Tack Shop is proud to present Drive Time Tonopah with your host, Faye and Brenda.
I'm Faye.
And I'm Brenda Boo.
And thanks for joining us for another episode of Drive Time Tonopah, coming to you directly from downtown Tonopah, Nevada, the dental floss capital of America.
What a distinctive honor that is for us here in Tonopah. We must have great teeth.
People may not realize it, but you know, the desert is excellent for good dental health.
Well, I didn't know that. That's wonderful.
All you need to do is step down to our local dental office and you'll see all the happy, smiling faces. But we're not here to talk about dental floss, Brenda.
No.
So what is it that has us coming back to into this the KFAB Radio Studios? What have you been thinking about recently?
Well, you know, we just released a two-part episode about our Canadian invasion vacation. And when this comes out, both parts should be out. And anybody who cares to listen to it should have listened to it by now, I'm sure, right? Not should, but probably did.
Absolutely.
And you're back to work, and I'm back to work, and Eric's back to work. But it hasn't been the easiest transition. And I contacted you, and I said, let's do a special Drive Time Tonopah.
Right.
And can I tell you what has been going on here?
Yes.
Although, I, you know, when I'm back in Iowa. Right now, of course, I'm here in the studio. But when I was back in Iowa earlier today.
Right. So you've been, you know, you've survived the vacation. You're back at home. Everyone's back into their regular daily grind. Mm-hmm. And then you're struck with this situation. So tell us what's been going on for you.
Yeah, so I get home, and as you we spoke about at on the last episode, I was, you know, fairly tearful at the airport because it was, in my mind, a very successful vacation. I was really happy to see you, and there had been a lot of build-up in preparation and in my mind to get there and here now it was over.
Right.
And when I got home, I had allowed myself two more days of work off, and then I had my weekend. So I had four more days. And the first 2 days, I was in this serious kind of funk, like when you're a kid and you wait for Christmas to come and you're so excited and you've opened all your presents and you've been to your all your grandparents' house and that's it, you've opened all the presents. And then you get this, like, depression, that this cloud that just comes over you. And it was really strong, and it was a funk I hadn't felt in a long, long time.
Oh, wow. Serious funk.
It was serious, yeah. There's a lot.
Because you've been in a funk on a number of occasions.
Yes. Oh, yes. This being in a funk, I'm no stranger to this feeling. But this was a very strong feeling. It felt like I was grieving, like, the death of something.
I mean, yeah.
The only thing I can think of is that I was pretty happy and content, and then I went way down to the other spectrum of feelings.
Right. Is this because, do you feel you have to do this?
No.
Are you thinking, oh, I've had so much fun, it's not fair, there has to be, the pendulum has to swing the other way in order for me to feel right?
No, this is not a conscious thing, because I feel pretty good right now, and as of yesterday and today, I've felt more like myself. This was a totally unconscious thing. It just comes over me.
Right.
So, when I was sitting at the table, and just this really sad feeling came over me, I looked over at Eric, and he was watching TV, and he seemed pretty normal. He was smiling, and I said to him, I go, doesn't it bother you that vacation is over? And he says, no, not really. And I said, why do you think it's so hard for me to let stuff go? And he's like, you know, I just don't know. I don't let things get to me like you do. And it was kind of at that moment, or maybe the day before, was when I thought, you know, okay, this funk comes over me, and I guess I can't control it because I don't feel like it. But what can I do about it now that it's here? Because I didn't want it to take over. I didn't want to feel that way.
Yeah, okay. So consciously you were hoping to feel good.
Yes.
But your body wouldn't let you, or your mind wouldn't allow you to stay happy.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I thought, you know, I bet you anything that Mark and Faye are not feeling like this. What is it different about me than Eric and Faye and Mark? Everybody else is like, that was a nice little distraction in life, and now Faye's planning his wedding, he's back to work. Why does this shake me so much? And I thought, well, some of it could be hormones, some of it's just the way everybody's brain works, but I thought, maybe there's something between men and women. So I started trolling the internet. I was Googling stuff. And it came up with this very typical thing, this answer, where it says women value relationships over accomplishments and things like that. And I kind of wanted to talk to you about it, because that's what our show is about a lot. It's about the differences between a straight woman and a gay man. And I don't think this has anything to do with sexuality, but you're still a man, and I'm still a woman.
Right, sure. Mm-hmm. And right away, I can see how Eric could be, no, I'm not bothered, do-do-do-do-do, and carrying on with his life. Because having spent time with Eric, he's a man of action.
Mm-hmm.
And he likes to be doing things. And I'm willing to bet that this vacation for him was probably difficult, in the sense that he would have liked to have been building a treehouse or, you know, taking the wheels off a car or doing some sort of either physical or mental task. And I think I am the same. In order to be happy, I need to be doing something. And I think Eric is back in his own realm. He doesn't have to be nice to people. He's got work to do, and he's active, and, you know, I'm sure he had a great time when he was here. But the reason he's not in a funk is because he's doing his daily grind, and for him, his daily grind is the thing that keeps him happy.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very, very accurate. Yeah,
I don't know about you, because we don't know what makes you happy. I'm not sure.
Why? Well, you don't think you couldn't pinpoint things that make me happy?
Well, because you're difficult to figure out. Hmm. You're some sort of strange enigma, because in order for me to be happy, I just need to have something to do. I have a task list. Mm-hmm. And if I want to be happy, I got to be ticking things off my task list. But for you, who knows what's going through your mind?
Yeah, I kind of felt like I could see when we were together how when one thing would kind of end in your mind, there was some kind of, like, I could almost hear the gears shifting, like, next. I could see it in you. It's like, okay, we did that, now let's do this. And I could see, like, about 9 o'clock, your body was like, okay, I can't do this anymore, but I'm gonna keep going. I got people in my house. But I could see where your time, because Eric's the same way, his body turns off. He's either going or he's not going.
Right.
For me, there has to be, too much of it becomes like, if it gets done, it gets done. If it doesn't, who cares? The world's not going to come to an end, right? That's my flawed logic, I suppose.
It seems to me that you're focusing on the endings of things. You're going, oh, the vacation is over. My life is over.
I say it like that, too. My life is over. I turn into the Cookie Monster.
I mean, you do. You do tend. You focus on the wrong thing. It seems to me you're always looking backwards, or you're looking at your footprints that you've made behind you and going, my feet are too small. You know?
Well, that could. I won't discount that theory. I wouldn't say that that's not true. It's hard for me to live in the moment. And if I am entirely in the moment, sometimes I get very self-conscious and nervous, and my nerves get the better of me, so I'm not really in that moment. It is easier for me to live in the past and the present, the future. I will grant you that.
And now, I believe we've had this conversation, but you rehash things over and over and over in your mind.
Oh, God. It's
and you're so
awful.
Have you been reliving this vacation, or... why are you concentrating on this moment in your life, this vacation, we'll call the moment,
mm-hmm.
and the moment occurred a week ago as we are recording this,
mm-hmm.
but you're still stuck in that week. You're stuck in April of 2013.
I would say that, in the most honest way, without sounding pathetic, that typically, how many syllables does that word have? Typically, my work week doesn't provide a lot of satisfaction. It's a lot of the same thing over and over and over again. It's very routine. I need routine, but I resent routine at the same time. So
right.
It wasn't that week. It's not like I keep reliving specific events from last week. It's just that I was very content and I was happy. And I feel like this is what a lot of my sadness comes from, is that, I don't know, do you feel this way? Do you feel like when you're in a room that you could look around and not even one person would really understand you? Or do you feel pretty well part of a group?
No, I'm not a group person. I've always feel... My mother described me as being like the deer that walks into the room who I need to suss out everything, and I need to take stock of all the dangers that are in the room. So I never really feel a part of the group until I start to get some feedback, or find a friend or whatever, or find somebody to latch on to.
Mm-hmm.
So I always feel like an outsider. Even within a group of friends, I feel that I'm an outsider.
Well, that's the way I feel, too. I always feel like there's not many people that I could be very truthful with or just give an honest response where I wouldn't get a lot of judgment from them back. And
right.
I don't mean to sound overly sentimental, and I don't mean to make you uncomfortable, but I felt like that connection with you, like here's somebody that maybe gets me, where I don't have to even say something, and you can look at me, and you know what I'm thinking. And that
right.
doesn't happen very often, and it was kind of like, it made you, it's kind of like when you realize you were missing a friendship that you didn't even know you were missing, and you're like, oh, wow, that's what I was missing, and now it's gone again. And
right.
It's as an adult, it sounds like a ridiculous thing to be thinking about, but I don't know. I think most people, even if they're married and have children, most people have at least one other person that they are buddies with,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Most healthy people do.
yeah.
But you know, I don't feel like I have a lot of friends. Perhaps a normal person does, but I feel very closed off from the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I agree. I think we have a great friendship. But just because we're not in the same room anymore, it doesn't change the terms of our friendship or the closeness of our relationship.
Yeah.
The thing that changes is proximity and how, you know, it's more difficult for us to talk, and we can't be in the same room, and wink and nudge and, you know, do looks anymore. But it doesn't reduce the quality of our friendship, I don't think. You're still as important to me 2,000 miles away as you are sitting on the couch with me.
What? That makes me feel good. But do you know what I was saying, though? I mean, I think you do. I don't know. I wonder why certain people, like you and I was thinking about this. I think we've seen the worst of people one too many times. And that's why we always think there's danger around the corner.
Sure. Yeah, I agree completely. I think both you and I have had difficult things occur in our life, and we're skeptical, we're leery of people. I trust very few people, and I'm always holding my cards close to my chest and protecting myself from what I perceive to be, or in the past I've had, you know, unpleasant things occur. So I'm naturally going to protect myself as much as I can. And I think you are the same way.
Mm-hmm. I see in you stuff that I need to do. Like, I'm kind of like a puppy dog running around with my tongue hanging out. Like, you know, just like, hey, how are you? Da, 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 da. You're more like the cat that's kind of walking on the windowsill looking at everybody going, I don't know about these people.
Yeah, perhaps. You know, at some point you need to learn to let go, or to take the chance that, you know, maybe this person is not going to hurt me, or you've got to start giving people a little more credit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I understand it's difficult. I think it's all about trusting people and trying to preserve your own safety, whether that's physically or emotional safety. And eventually you need to learn to take some risks in that regard, and to try and let people into your life a little bit, and not focus so much on back in 1985 the guy stole my basketball, so I'm not going to let anybody play with my basketball anymore. Every once in a while, you've got to bring your basketball to the court and let the other kids play with it too.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, can I ask you this question, which I think it's kind of related, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's get away from this part, because there's something else I want to ask you.
All right.
Okay. When you are dealing with the world and you feel like somebody has called your favorite band Steely Dan and comedian Carrot Top just a bunch of hacks,
right?
What is your immediate reaction, like, without just instinct, what wells up in you? Because as I've spoke about ad nauseum when we were at the Pride 48, and you gave me this look. There was a look in your eye of just daggers, and I'm like, that's the real Faye right there, uncensored. He just did not like my response. So I'm wondering, when you feel attacked even about your preferences, do you feel like, what, are you immediately mad? What do you feel like?
Well, I've always been prone to hide my feelings. Like, I've worked very hard to mash down and keep held inside any sort of negative response.
Mm-hmm.
So even though, you know, if someone affronts me in that way, I'm much more likely to pretend that it doesn't bother me. I'm less likely to have like a knee-jerk reaction,
mm-hmm.
and be upset with anyone. But I'll probably go away mad and thinking that they're some they're an idiot or whatever, you know.
Right.
That I don't like this person.
So you have a long fuse in a lot of ways. I mean,
I do.
I do that too. I mean, it really takes... I either have to be exhausted and you are the last person to poke me and for me to say something snotty, because I'll try to hide it too. I think, though, that anybody who notices anything about the world around them can pick up on subtle cues about, you know, like with Eric, I'll say, did you notice this? And he'll be like, huh? No, I didn't see it. I'm like, God, it's so obvious that this person was mad when I said this. You know, he won't notice it because everybody sees the world differently.
Yeah.
So maybe I would just saw it in your eyes. This was not.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about the Steely Dan situation.
Well, you know, in general, other things I've said, I could tell it really rubbed you the wrong way. And you just bit your tongue. Because I was asking you a lot of personal... I remember at Pride 48 when you were doing my makeup, I was just being like... had no filter. I was asking you all these really personal questions. And you're like, God damn, do I answer this chick? Who is this girl? Why is she asking me all these things? And you went along. You played along. And you're very honest. I appreciate that. But in hindsight, I don't know if I'd do that again. I don't know why I was just being so pokey.
Well, but, you know, this is how we meet. This is how we learn from each other. We meet people. And, you know, you're not a perceived threat.
Mm.
If I was talking with someone else, I may not have been as open with them as I was with you. Because I feel there's a tenderness and I have a lot of care and love and concern for you, and I feel that you are a sweet and warm and loving person, and you deserve an honest answer. And I may have reacted in the moment to something, possibly from a comedic standpoint too, right?
Yes.
But I didn't ever come away from Pride 48 going, oh, that Brenda Boo, she's just asking me so many personal questions. I didn't think that in the slightest.
Mm-hmm. You know what I liked? There was, when we were at your house, this is the smallest thing, but I don't know why it stuck in my head. You were asking us, this is kind of a side note, unrelated to what we were just saying, but just kind of like something that I liked that you did, was you were doing laundry, and you said, now, is there anything in here that you're worried about shrinking? And I'm like, oh, my God, somebody who does laundry like I do. Because Eric will just throw everything in there, and it'll come out all practically on fire. And I'm like, you ruined these pants. What are you doing?
Right.
I don't know why I felt like sharing that. Maybe I'll edit that out.
I do want to point back, though, like, I think you tend to overreact to or to overinterpret what you think people are thinking. And I think I do too. I'm not saying you. I think a person can misinterpret what someone is thinking by, you know, just by observing. And you often say this, and you say, oh, well, didn't you see this about this guy? And Eric says, what? No, I didn't see any of that. Well, maybe there is nothing to see. And I think this is true because I'll say to Mr. Anderson, you must have been really pissed off when that guy said your toes are purple or whatever. And he'll go, what? Oh, I didn't even hear him. And I'll go, oh, man, you look so pissed off when you said that. I was certain you were really angry. Right? So
yes. What is this language Mr. Anderson is speaking?
I think we have to be careful in our interpretations. You know, people say, oh, I'm very empathic. I know exactly what someone's thinking. And I think that, too. I think I know exactly what people are thinking all the time, but you know, that's not necessarily true.
Yeah.
Well, I want to get on to this fact that Why do you feel a need to be interpreting everyone's thoughts?
Oh.
Like, why do you go into a situation and you go, oh, that guy's mad at me, or, oh, I just insulted Faye's toes. He's mad now and he's not going to like me forever.
I think if I was to go back to my own family, it was everything. My parents and my siblings are all pretty tight-lipped about everything. So I would want to know what was going on, but nobody would ever, like, I would, you know, ask questions. When you're a kid, you ask certain questions, like, why does this grandparent not have the same last name as Dad? Shouldn't that be the way it is? Well, they wouldn't tell me that Grandma got divorced.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. You know, I'd ask a question, you know, about, I don't think I ever asked any sex questions, but I can remember asking my mom questions that might have been kind of touchy, and she'd always give me the, I don't know.
Right.
Oh, okay. So, I think it was a survival method of just trying to figure out the world around me.
Mm-hmm. You had to interpret. You had to use your own interpretation because you couldn't get a straight answer from anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can remember being a little kid and going to school and just really being like that puppy dog. I like you. I accept everybody the way they are. I didn't, you know. And then getting unsolicited comments from people about how I was different than them. And I remember that really threw me for a loop. So then I started, it just kind of put me on guard about the world, you know, like, if I don't watch it, everybody's going to point out how I'm different and attack me somehow.
Right.
So I need to, you know, getting caught off guard one too many times. So trying to protect yourself, I suppose.
Yeah. And I understand that, too. I think every one of us has some sort of self-preservation instinct within us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always trying to read the world and perceive the threat and make sure that, you know, nothing's going to harm us, or we can see and avoid
mm-hmm.
the threat or the dangers.
You know, I don't have kids, and I don't. I probably have said this on my podcast, but one of the big deciding factors, besides not wanting all the responsibility, and I didn't know if I wanted to create another little person just like me, was I figured, why have a kid? They're not going to like me either.
Oh.
This was a thought that went through my head, you know. So this is horrible self-esteem. It's very honest, you know, that's my honest, one of the reasons. But I just thought, oh, here would just be somebody else that wouldn't like me.
Right. That's terrible.
Isn't that just negative? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. I mean, I just, you know, poor self-esteem is a very boring topic. I don't want to, you know, it's, whatever.
But but, you know, I think we all suffer from poor self-esteem. You know, you might see in your daily life people who appear to be very happy and to have zero self-esteem issues, but I think deep down inside, we all have some sort of self-esteem issue.
Mm-hmm.
I know I do. I have self-esteem issues too. And I, you know, I know many people who are like very successful and gregarious and fantastic people who I think have self-esteem issues because they feel they need to prove to the world how great they are. That's why we all drive BMWs and, you know, have silver serving bowls.
Right. What is something, can I ask you, if somebody, what would be something that would really hurt your feelings? Like, what is, do you mind, I'm not trying to give ammunition to the world, but I mean, what is something that is like your really soft spot? Like for me, for example, like if somebody calls me stupid, that really, that's a real soft spot for me.
Yeah.
Or if they were to say, God, Brenda, you know, something about my looks, those would be the two things that would really bother me. Like, if you say I have a crappy job, yeah, I know it. If you say you don't have any money, yeah, I know it. But those two things, those really, or if they said, they were to say, you're crazy, then that really, that throws me.
Right. I don't know. I think I'm a little bit tied up in my appearance or how I present myself. I don't like to be misinterpreted. Like, if I have an intention to do something and someone sees it as, you know, me trying to get something out of it, or if I don't know. It's a tough question. I think the hardest thing for me is to hear someone say something about my appearance or my look or.
Mm-hmm. Have you always? Well, you're very handsome. You're cute. Have you always felt that way? Have you relied on your looks your whole life to kind of be that that in with people?
No, I don't think so, because I don't feel like I'm the best looking person, but I know that my whole life I have not felt like a handsome person, and many times in my life people have pointed out to me that, you know, oh, look at those guys, they're all looking at you and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's through other people saying he thinks you're really cute, or this person likes this about you. Mm-hmm. I've come to learn that I am a good looking person. So, like, I know that I'm not ugly. It's taken me a long time to learn, and it's also taken me a long time to come to terms and to accept me, the person that I am. You know, I could be much better looking if I went to the gym and I could do a lot more things to make myself more attractive, but I don't feel that I need to do that, and I'm, for the most part, happy with my physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, but it's taken me a long time to come to that point in my life. And I think that's what is that's what's most troubling to me, is if someone thinks that I'm not as good looking as I think I am. So I am concerned about it. I have appearance issues.
Mm-hmm. And
those are my self-esteem issues.
What?
Like, right now I think my ass looks fat.
Oh, are you kidding me? Oh,
I look
God.
Like, I feel like I have a old man, daddy man, fat ass.
You have no ass. You're so skinny. What are you talking about? What's that? Okay, you may not want to reveal this, but I'm going to guess, based on being around you last week, that your pants are maybe a 30?
No, 34 or 36.
No.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
But you wear them really loose. They're not tight. I bet if you were to take a tape measure around your waist, it's no more than 32.
It's 33 minimum.
Oh, well, I was off by an inch. That is tiny for a grown-ass man. My God.
Yeah, I know, but I just, you know, sometimes you look at yourself in the mirror and you go, oh, it looks like some, I look like, I feel, right now, I feel like a dad, like a 45-year-old dad.
Or 46.
No, 45.
I believe you've had a birthday. That would make you 46.
I know I'm 46, but I feel like a 45-year-old dad.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, I hugged you several times, and I felt like I could crush you. I'm not that strong. So, you're not big. You're tiny.
No, I recognize I'm not a big person, but, you know, these are the things in my mind, right? I go,
right.
Ooh. If I were to see that guy walking away down the street, I go, ooh, dad, I don't want to fuck, you know?
God.
So.
Well, maybe that's part of the problem. not problem, but part of the, like, always thinking about sex. Doesn't that fucking wear you out? Jesus.
No.
No? Oh, my God.
I don't always think about that.
No, but I mean, it's kind of always on your radar.
Oh, sure it is. Well, that's what men do, Brenda. This is a thing that all men do. If some man tries to tell you that he's not at least 50% of the time thinking about sex, then he's not a man.
But how do you get shit done when you're always... I mean, I've heard your podcast. You'd be like, well, yeah, the boos are coming next week. Oh, and look at that cute boy.
You have to look at the beauty of the world around you. You can't go through life and go, oh, good, there's that fucking blue sky and sun. God damn it. You have to recognize that there's air out there to breathe. So a good-looking man walking down the street, how can you not see a beautiful thing or a nice-looking car, for instance? I was following a 68 Mustang today. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. To me, I don't see that many guys that I would think are cute. And to me, it takes more than a pretty face. I don't know. I've never been one that's just constantly kind of searching around. There was a time in my early 30s when my hormones were really whacked, and I thought, if this is the way a guy feels, forget it. This sucks. I hated it. I was, because I kind of thought about sex all the time, and I was like, I can't get anything done. This is irritating.
Well, it's not like it prevents me from doing my daily work, but I mean, you know, if I see a guy, I'm not immediately going to think, I wonder what life would be like in that guy's bed. But if I see someone who's good looking, I'll go, there's a good looking guy. Oh, my heart just lifted a little.
Aww.
Okay, back to chopping the tomatoes, whatever.
Oh, so it makes you feel better.
Yeah.
See, that to me, that just becomes want, and a want that can't never be satisfied. So if I see somebody good looking, I think, oh, well, that's something that'll never happen.
There's an element of that too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, here you are again dwelling on the negative aspect, how you're not going to ever be able to have that when you could be looking at, oh, he's cute and he smiled at me a little. You know, that's what I think.
But you're assuming that my, the way I go through the world and the way people react to me are the same as what happens to you. Man, I'm fucking invisible. I am invisible in this world. And if anybody ever, you know, if I have an interaction, like I went and got some medicine before vacation, and the clerk was talking to me, kind of joking around, and it totally threw me. I was kind of looking around like, what? Somebody's talking to me? Because I'm always very open to talking to strangers when we go through the cash register. I'll be like, oh, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. Most people don't engage me, though. So, you know, when you feel kind of invisible, it just feels like, you know, something else that's...
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on to a different question I want to ask you, okay?
Sure.
Okay, so this is kind of... I think this might be connected with what we were just talking about. So let's say you're sitting there and you're cutting tomatoes and your mind goes blank. What do you think of? What's the first thing that pops in your head after that?
Well... That's a tough one. I've been thinking about this and trying to come up with what my answer is, and my mind's just blank. No, more than likely, I'm going to be thinking about something that's completely not related to the task at hand, and it's going to be something that's of concern on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I really compartmentalize, so.
What does that mean? I've heard you say it. I've heard Mark in Canada say it. I've heard experts talk about it, and it's kind of like what sociopaths do. can compartmentalize
sure
stuff. You know, like, oh, sure, I raped that girl yesterday, but now I'm at my job as a dietitian, you know?
Right, sure. And that's kind of exactly what it's like. It's like putting things into a container and putting it off to the side. So if, like, say, for instance, we're talking about the wedding, and we have, you know, we have financial issues with the wedding. We have spending, you know, some considerable amount of money,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's a concern for both me and Mr. Anderson, but I'm not going to worry about that right now. So I'm going to wrap that up into a little box in my brain and just set it to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take some, when I'm not doing something else, I will take some time to think about that. When I go to work, my work can be stressful sometimes and can be quite difficult. And, you know, some bad things happen at work that I'm privy to, people getting hurt and, you know, people dying and stuff. And I compartmentalize that because I really only ever think about those things when I'm at work or when I'm about to go to work or heading to work. So when I leave my job, I leave the 80-year-old heart attack guy that couldn't be resuscitated in his front yard. I leave that at work. And as I'm driving home, the wind is leaving those things behind, and I'm starting to grab all the stuff that I compartmentalized at home and jam that back into my brain. So when my mind goes blank when I'm chopping tomatoes, one of these things is going to pop into my head. Maybe it'll be the situation at work, maybe a mistake I made or something I didn't do quite right, or thinking about ways I can be better at my job. Maybe it'll be the issues around the wedding. Where are we going to get flowers? You know, those things that are of concern to me are likely to pop into my head when I'm having a blank moment.
Mm. So when you were saying all that, I was thinking the things that you put in a little box and put away are a lot of stuff that you have no control over. So I do that. Like if we're writing out bills and I've written all the money out that we can spend and still have some money to live on, and I know that I have this other bill, I was just like, I can't do anything about that. I'll think about that in a couple of days when I get some money in here. So mm-hmm. you can't do anything about, you can only do so much about the crisis at work, and you can't control every phone call's outcome that comes into the fire station. So
right.
I can understand why you could put that aside. The reason I asked you that is a lot of times if I'm doing something and my mind goes blank and it's not occupied with a podcast or TV, some random terrible event or perceived terrible event from my past will pop up just out of nowhere. I don't
sure.
know. So
and I don't think that's unusual.
Yeah. I hate it. So when I see people who can who don't seem to have events from 1999 popping in their head out of nowhere on a regular basis, I was like, what are you doing that I'm not doing?
But is it because you don't you think that your brain is telling you that you have this unresolved issue,
mm-hmm.
and shouldn't you spend some time to think about that situation?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. But a lot of times there's nothing you can do to change it.
I know, but don't you think that your brain is telling you, you know, there's this thing that happened in 1999 and you're not finished with it. You may not have any control over it now that it's already gone and passed and done. But don't you think you need to spend some effort to think about why it's affecting you or what you can do to resolve it?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is what happens to me. Like, I take some work examples, for instance. when I'm having a blank-headed moment, a work situation will pop into my head where I feel like I didn't do something right or I could have done something better. And, you know, I recognize I need to deal with this in my own head because it's making me uncomfortable. I'm not right with it. And I need to work through the situation to either justify that what I did was correct or to admit to myself that I made a mistake and I should have done something better.
Mm-hmm.
And then I resolve that and then I can move on.
Sure. What if the things that usually bother me are things are more about rules? Like, I feel like a lot of times that I'm adhering to a set of life rules that a lot of people don't. So somebody may have, I feel like somebody, maybe somebody shamed me or embarrassed me or insulted me, but I don't think, you know, an eye for an eye is necessarily the right way to handle it. So I will rehash these things where I feel like somebody said something mean to me and I could have said something back equally mean, but I didn't think that was the right thing to do. That's what a lot of the things that pop into my mind, it's like, I know what you did, but I'm not as skunky and skinky as you are.
Right. But shouldn't that be an affirmation for you that you did the right thing? You reacted as a better person?
Yeah, but I guess that would be where the lack of control, where part of you wants to be right and do the right thing, but part of you also wants to let that person know that I know what you're doing.
Right.
You know? So that, I guess that little nugget is always there, you know? But I couldn't live with myself if I had been just as skanky and nasty as they were. You know? It's not like if I could redo that moment, I would make a different choice. I probably would make the same choice and nothing would change, right?
Yeah.
So.
And I think, you know, in situations like that too, I think as we get older, I'll speak for myself, as I get older and I see these situations where you just want to be mad and
nasty.
Have your say or be nasty or mm-hmm. fight back, so to speak. I'm starting to feel at this point in my life at 46 that I'm kind of feeling more apt. I feel like I would more likely, I want to be the asshole and say, fuck you, buddy. Never leave me alone. And I want to stand up for myself.
Right.
But I know it's the right thing to do, and I'm kind of feeling like it's time for me to stop being Mr. Nice Guy, because I've been Mr. Nice Guy, Mr. Deer walking into the room all my life, and I'm sick and tired of people, you know, walking all over me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hate it when people say something that's it's passive-aggressive. You know, like, I see mm-hmm. what you're getting at, but if I call you on it, there's no good that's going to come out of it. But I see what
right.
you're doing. Like, for just an example, I didn't mean it like this, but on Lotso a couple weeks ago, when Jay said he was taking a break, and I said, that's okay, Jay, if this has become too much of a burden for you.
Right.
And he's like, jeez. Guilt trip much? And I was like, oh wow, that was really, it sounded really snotty, and I didn't mean it that way.
Yeah, I thought it was funny myself.
It's become too much of a burden. Don't worry about it. So hopefully he'll be coming back soon. But I guess it kind of goes back around what you were saying. Maybe people's intentions. Maybe I don't know people's intentions all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe giving some people the benefit of the doubt would help, you know, ease your mind. And unless they're really blatantly up in your shit and being a jerk, then mm-hmm. you can assume they're being an asshole.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, as much as I want, you know, when that situation occurs where someone has wronged me in some way, mm-hmm. as much as I really want to just, like, give them the same amount of crap back, I know that that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But in sometimes there are ways to assert yourself without being the asshole too, right?
Right.
And I'm feeling that I'm getting to that point in my life where I don't want to take bullshit from anybody anymore. And either I will remove myself from the situation or I'm going to have to start standing up for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm doing that in small ways when certain situations encounter certain situations.
I think you are. I mean, I think the way you handle stuff like that is clever. I saw some of your sarcasm pop up in our vacation that I'll probably never forget. But, you know, mm-hmm. you got your message across, but it wasn't super hostile or aggressive, but you're like, hey, everybody take a moment here.
And I know this is one of my flaws, is I can be a vicious counterpart. Like, when I'm mad about something, I'm more likely to make a snide, vicious, evil comment on it rather than say, I don't like the way you pour that milk. I might say, you're going to pour it all over the sink too? You know, or something like that. So I know that I'm bad for this.
Mm-hmm. Like, when I had put a bottle of water in your car, in the trunk, and I just set it next to my purse, because I didn't think we'd be driving, and I'd come back and I would pick it up. It wouldn't have a chance to roll around, and the next thing I know, you're handing me this bottle of water. Do you remember that?
I remember that completely, yes.
And what did you say? Do you remember? Oh, I think you left this bottle of water in my trunk.
Where it could roll around and slosh about or something like that.
Yes. I said, please, let me take care of that.
It was very sarcastic, but it was funny.
Oh, it didn't hurt my feelings at all. I was just like, yeah. Note, do not put liquids that may in any possible way leak in the trunk.
Oh, yes, I know. I'm sorry.
You don't have to be. It was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Let's ask at least one more question, okay?
Okay.
All right. When Mr. Anderson is asleep, does he go to sleep before you do at night? Mm. Or do you go to bed at the same time?
Yeah, we go to bed at the same time.
Oh, do you?
It's hit and miss whether one or the other of us falls asleep first.
Okay.
It's 50-50. Sometimes I do, sometimes he does.
Well, in this household, Eric always falls asleep first.
Mm-hmm.
Always. He gets up before I do, but I always lay in bed if we go to bed similar times and be awake for an hour or so. And I have a tendency to wake up in the middle of the night and be awake for an hour, try to play Words with Friends, even though some people haven't played for a while.
I've been busy.
I know you have. I just wanted to say that. I just wanted to hear you get defensive. I've been busy. So I'm laying there in bed and Eric's sleeping away and breathing. Sometimes I feel kind of lonely, you know, like here I am in bed with my husband, but I'm alone with my own thoughts. Do you feel that way ever? And what do you do to... I should ask you first. Do you ever just kind of feel lonely?
It's very rare. Very rare do I ever feel... If I feel lonely, it's not because I need one person. It's because I need someone different or something. I need some kind of interaction with people, you know, other than my husband, I think.
Yeah.
I haven't felt lonely in a long time. The last time I really felt lonely was when I was single.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a man about town, and I just felt like I had nowhere to go and nowhere to be.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't think of a time when I, in the last 10 years, when I felt lonely.
Well, that's wonderful.
It is kind of good, but I have felt that I need more people in my life and more interaction with the other humans. But I don't interpret that as feeling lonely.
Yeah.
Sort of. I mean, I guess technically it is, but I've never felt alone and felt that I needed, I'm so alone, I need someone in my life.
Well, you know, I was looking at my Twitter numbers today, mm-hmm. and I am probably less than 20 away from 40,000 tweets.
Wow.
Exactly. Wow. And I know this has been a problem for a long time. But I was thinking, when I do it, it's because I am so caught up in my own brain that, you know, that I need something outside my brain to distract me. So, like, when you said you thought I was going to be more emotional when I was up there,
mm-hmm.
you should have seen inside of my brain. It was like, ugh, it was all over the place. And, you know, I try my best to keep my shit to myself. But sometimes, like, when I'm over-tweeting, it's because, okay, the shit in my head is too much. I gotta let some of it out.
Right. Yeah.
So it seems like sometimes, though, that lonely feeling happens, like, in the middle of the night when I'm cleaning. And if I have two jobs in the same day where nobody's home, so I haven't talked to anybody for hours, that bothers me. But you don't you don't feel that way. You're content not to communicate with people.
Well, yeah, for a period of time. I mean, I can't go endlessly without having. I need interaction with people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't need totally intimate interaction with people.
Right.
You know, I've spent a lot of my life alone and on my own, so I think we've talked about this before. I'm a very solitary person, and I'm quite happy to spend the day by myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can do that. I mean, I have logged many hours by myself. I just mm-hmm. have noticed that extended, you know, day after day after day, where I'm kind of just keeping myself company, that it just feels out of balance, I guess,
right,
more than anything. So.
Yeah. I recognize that I do need to have interactions with people, and some of them have to be, I guess, intimate. That's why we have husbands in our lives. Hopefully you're getting intimate interactions with your spouse. But I need non-intimate interaction with people too. But I don't refer to it as being lonely. I just realize that, you know, I got to get up and do something. Like,
what do you mean intimate? Are you just talking about?
You know, just like personal. I'm not talking about sex.
Okay.
I'm talking about, you know, just like sharing, just being quiet and honest and.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sharing your sort of your more tender, secretive side with someone.
I see. Yeah. So during the course of the day, a lot of it, I just feel like bullshitting. It's not that I want to solve the world's problems. I just feel like, you know, talking and hanging out or something. You know, it isn't always about deep feelings for me. Seems like it, but not always.
This is what I don't understand about, you know how some people, they'll just show up on your doorstep and are like, I've heard of this. I've heard of this in certain circles where people will come over for coffee. Oh, Bob was over for coffee.
Yeah.
And, you know, if, like, Bob was to show up on my doorstep for coffee, I'd go, like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, you didn't call, or what do you want? I'm like, I'm just here to have a chat or have a coffee. Oh, okay, here, here's your coffee, here's your cream and sugar. You done that yet? Like, this is not, I don't know if I could do this.
Yeah.
This is foreign to me.
Yeah, people did that, well, people do that to my parents. My aunt and uncles would do that all the time, cousins, every once in a while. My mom's brother will pop in the house, and they'll sit mm-hmm. down and talk for, you know, half an hour, and then he'll go.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I've done this too. I mean, I'm being a little goofy here, but, you know, I understand this. But it seems at this time and this stage in my life, that would be very odd. I would feel very odd about, I'm coming over for coffee. I go, oh, God, I got to get the dog hair up off the floor and put the dildos away and,
oh,
you know.
My. I suppose it depends on how
put on some pants.
Pants, you say? Are you walking around in your undies all the time?
No, not necessarily. I just, you know, it's could happen though.
Yeah. There. Yeah.
All I'm saying is, people, you don't want to just show up.
Don't come knocking at Faye's door and expecting the red carpet treatment, right?
Exactly. Give me 15 minutes notice at least.
Well, I suppose we should wrap up this conversation unless there's any of these other questions that I posed to you that you want to talk about.
Well, I'd like to talk more, but I'm afraid we're going to need to wrap it up.
Okay. Well, Faye, if people want to contact us about any or all of these topics, they can write us at what?
FayeandBrenda@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
They can telephone us as well at
319.
You tell them the number.
I know it. It's 319-535-0266, I believe, or 0-BOO. So 319-535-0-BOO.
And thanks again, everybody, for joining us on Drive Time to NOPA. And we hope you'll come back for the next episode.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget the floss.
Don't forget the floss.
Okay. Bye.
Smile.
This is KFAB Radio.